Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I'm Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. And I wanted to use the Warriors having a couple days off because they played Sunday against the Suns. You can listen to the podcast that I did with Nate Duncan about that. And then they don't play again until Wednesday against the Raptors. So a couple days where they do not have games, and I wanted to, let's call it, catch up on a few different things. And one of the areas that I thought was most interesting and get by far the most questions on is how the Warriors are dealing with their big man situation. And by big man situation, as many of you would guess, I do not mean Draymond Green. He's doing a very good job doing his own thing, not including Kevin Durant. He is a large human being. This is more the other guys, like the guys that could potentially fit those non-essential individually, but pivotal overall role, both in the regular season and in the playoffs. And so, you know, Zaza Pachulia, David West, Looney, McAdoo, everyone else like that. And so I wanted to kind of set the table with where everybody is so far. And one of the important things to get out of the way at the outset is that due to their vastly different roles, you're not making an apples-to-apples comparison between these guys. Zaza Pachulia plays an overwhelming proportion of his minutes with the starting five, which includes him, of course. David West plays mostly in backup lineups that also include Kevin Durant. Kevon Looney bounces around a fair amount. JaVale has switched around in roles, also plays a lot of garbage time when he actually gets on the floor. So these are not meant to be apples-to-apples comparisons, but awareness of that fact is important because then that allows you to look within that context, within that, to try to see what you can glean from it. And a great place to start with that is with Zaza Pachulia. And the reason I want to start with Pachulia is because there are a couple of correct conceptions of Pachulia, and then there are a couple of things that he's doing that might be, let's call it, underappreciated. But have to start with the biggest negative so far, which is just that the Warriors have not defended well when Pachulia has been on the floor. So Draymond Green's minutes are pretty well split between minutes that Pachulia is on the floor and minutes they are not. So right now it's about 16 with Pachulia, about 17 and a half without him. In the minutes where they play together, which it should be noted also generally do not include Andre Iguodala, who's a good defender, the Warriors are allowing 109.7 points per 100 possessions. That might sound bad, and it should, because the worst defense in the league for the totality of their games, which is the New York Knicks at the moment, they're around that same line. I think they're like 109 point something else. And during the other half of Draymond Green's minutes, when Zaza Pachulia is not on the floor, a wide variety of other combinations of players with and without, the Warriors are allowing 99.1 points per possessions, which would put them in the top five for this year. So despite the presence of Draymond Green, player who finished second in defensive player of the year the last 2 years and who will probably be a contender again, the Warriors just have not defended well when Pachulia is on the floor. Not all of that is his fault. This team has slacked off at various moments, including early in the third quarter, a lot. And it's also true that they don't have a capable, you know, they don't have anybody who's like Andrew Bogut or like Festus Ezeli this year. So it's not like swapping him with David West or something else is going to be some sort of cure-all. But it is very important to understand and appreciate that Pachulia has these weaknesses. And the further we get into the season, the more likely it seems that defensively, some of those problems will persist throughout, and especially in pick and roll coverages and as a help defender, we're getting closer to the line where we can kind of say that those flaws are baked into the cake, because physically, you know, there are communication issues that can get better, but physically just getting to the spot and then affecting the shot is not something that guys often round into form. And I still think back to when I had Jonathan Charks on one of the early Locked On Warriors when I went through those kind of position previews, and John had covered Zaza Pachulia when he was on the Mavericks last year, and he noted that he did really well for the first half of the year and then just kind of fell off a cliff the second half. And so there was this question, because that related in his mind, and I agree with him, to being overworked. He was playing too many minutes, that having a summer off, everything else, knowing that he was going to be playing a more reasonable role with the Warriors was going to kind of lead to him being more like the first half of last year than the second. And offensively, you know, he's putting some stuff together, and that's a good thing. But the defensive part of it might just be an aspect of Pachulia that the Warriors are going to have to deal with. And that is a negative thing in terms of being a starter, but he's done reasonably well offensively, and that could theoretically bode well for him as a second unit guy, because the Warriors will always need offense from that, especially because odds are they're going to go away from the Durant stagger in the playoffs, just because at that point, let's say you're playing all those guys around 40 minutes a game, you probably want those to line up as much as possible. And one of the theories of playoff basketball, the Raptors kind of flew in the face of this, but and they did well with that staggered second unit, but if the Warriors' best players are so much better than everybody else, one of the mentalities is to try to have a second unit that is mostly bench players that can just keep you in it. You know, if you believe your starters are better than everyone else, then if your backups keep it flat, you're fine. And the Warriors have struggled with that over the years, and it does bring in other issues in terms of bench construction and everything else. But Zaza Pachulia could do a pretty good job in that role, because he can be an overall positive offensively, and then defensively, it's less of an issue because he'll probably be going up against second unit guys for the most part. However, you might want to mitigate that or reduce it against teams that have talented drivers on their second unit, because, like, I'm thinking of the Spurs, you know, depending on how they are doing Patty Mills and Tony Parker at that point, because those guys could have a field day against Pachulia because he still has trouble contesting. The other positive I wanted to mention is that he's actually done a very good job as a defensive rebounder. So the Warriors are rebounding 75.4% of opposing misses when Pachulia is on the floor. And the only player on the team who has a better number there is David West. David West has a much smaller sample size. He's played about half the minutes that Pachulia has played, and he's going largely against second units. And so if the Warriors are doing, you know, reasonably well against other team starters in rebounding when Pachulia's on the floor, that's a smaller thing than trying to, at the center, trying to stop shots and make shots harder, but it certainly does help. And so that is something that he can do. The Warriors have also gotten a lot better at moving the ball when he's on the floor, and if they can kind of work within that direction, there is a positive place for him. And it's also worth noting that they can't use Pachulia in that ideal role unless somebody else steps up into the starting lineup, because they can't play Draymond Green at center for 20, 30 minutes a game at this point. So even if it's, let's say, lowering their regular season ceiling, you have to play somebody there. And while it'll be fun to see if they can really move into some other guys and try things out, at a certain venture, as long as Kerr understands that Pachulia is not a part of their best five, it's not that big a deal, as long as that realization comes. And that ties in with David West, because West is in many ways benefiting from taking the more favorable spot. So West is primarily playing against second unit guys, but he is doing a very good job. He has been efficient overall from the field. He's shooting over 50%, 51.5, which is not perfect, but well enough. And he's rebounding, you know, so he's averaging about 8 rebounds per 36 minutes. I like using per 36 minutes because it scales a lot of different stuff. And, you know, the Warriors are playing well when he's out there. It is an open question whether they would do as well if he was a starter. He's a smaller guy. He hasn't really had the center spot except for a few little bits with the Spurs. That isn't really his background. So some of the same issues in terms of pick and roll coverages that happened with Zaza Pachulia will happen with David West. But he would theoretically in the starting five be playing with Durant and Green. So depending on how they want to structure the defensive rotations, they could actually do some fun things there. And West has a little bit more range and a little bit more comfort on his jump shot, so that is something that can help as well. But the Warriors are doing great when West is on the floor. it also benefits that his minutes tie a lot with Durant against these second units. So the Warriors are, it's incredible. They're plus 24.7 so far this year when Wes is on the floor. But the same thing that causes me pause in terms of, oh, Wes would be great with the starting five, is not an argument against trying it, because you certainly do want to see how that goes, because if it's great, then that's another option that they have to go to, whether it be, you know, starting games down the line, or even just knowing that a Curry, Thompson, Durant, Green, West five can really work. And that's one of the combinations that we actually haven't seen that much this year, just because they've kept West more in his role at this point. Over the course of what's called the next 25 games, that is one that I will expect to see. One that we have seen is JaVale McGee, and McGee is fascinating in that because he does basically the opposite in many ways of what Zaza Pachulia does. So he is generally has a regard as a good rebounder. Broadly speaking, the Warriors have not rebounded well when he's been on the floor, though of course that is absolutely worth noting that a lot of his minutes have come in garbage time, except for that really nice stretch against the Nuggets, and there it seemed like they were doing a good enough job. But what McGee brings is an athleticism, shot blocking, and somebody who also can take advantage of running the floor. And McGee is not perfect against everyone. There are certain players that can stretch him out, that can force him to make mistakes, but one of the archetypes, let's call it, that McGee can work really well against is actually a powerhouse but a little bit slow center. And there are some of those guys that are on second units and some of those guys that are on starting units. And so he did well basically just beating Yusuf Nurkic down the floor. And Kerr can deploy that when necessary. And if it goes really well, then maybe you start to incorporate it a little bit more. But that dynamic is something that nobody else can really bring, especially with the other pluses and minuses on the floor. One would assume that Kevon Looney could do some of that, but Looney's smaller, and because he's still recovering from his hip things, I don't think he's close to, well, at least what his peak athleticism was back when he was in high school, back, you know, in the early days of his time at UCLA. But it's also possible that Looney won't ever be kind of that type of guy. And McGee's also just so much longer. He's thin, you know, in that sense, but he can affect shots. He can also jump, and we've seen the Warriors in that first game, not as much against the Suns, but against the Nuggets, really embrace that and find lanes for him in terms of alley-oops, and against, let's call them, less aware opponents, that is something that they can really use to their advantage. One concept that I would love to see the Warriors do is try out McGee with David West on that second unit with Kevin Durant. They don't have enough clear-cut, you know, great perimeter players in the sense that, you know, they're really squeezing those guys out. It could allow Iguodala a little bit of maybe a change in the rotation. If you play then you're playing Durant at the three, then, you know, you could try out McCaw, can try out somebody else, but Iguodala isn't necessarily bringing a lot in that lineup. But the Durant, West, JaVale McGee combination might actually work really well. It's something that I would like to see over the next few weeks, just to see if it works, especially because McGee isn't getting so many minutes otherwise that you're worried about burning the candle off both ends. And that brings us to Kevon Looney. Looney's role has vacillated the most because sometimes he's the center, sometimes he plays next to Draymond Green and it becomes unclear who's the center or who's not. And then he plays in garbage time when he is the small forward, a role that is completely not conducive to him. But one consistency that we have seen from Kevon Looney is that he is a monster on the offensive glass. The Warriors have rebounded 25.4%, so a little more than a quarter of their misses when he was on the floor, and that includes both the garbage time and the other time. I should also note that that's actually higher with JaVale McGee. McGee is the only guy who plays meaningful minutes that is up there. And so that gives Looney something that Festus Ezeli had, which the Warriors actually used really well, which is a single person that they can just sic on the offensive glass, and that is not essential for their transition defense. So that is part of the reason why playing Looney with Draymond Green can work really well, because Green is a talented transition defender. You don't have to give Draymond that assignment at all. And so you just put Looney on the boards. If he gets it, everybody can run back. You can maybe hit Clay. Clay's been a monster for basically the last 3 years in terms of shooting off of an offensive rebound. And you don't have to sacrifice that much because most teams aren't going to send, you know, four or obviously not five guys back, especially if Looney has enough respect to do that. And something else you want to look at it's part of the context with offensive rebounds, but I've noticed it with Looney, particularly over the last 2 weeks, is that. He also draws a lot of fouls when he's going for offensive rebounds, and so that doesn't count in the stats in the same way, but it produces an even larger benefit most of the time, depending on what it leads to and how the free throws go. But Looney brings that element, and that's something that the Warriors definitely know how to use. They did it a little bit with Azeeley. Of course, Looney does not bring Azeeley's defensive acumen to the table, so that is something worth considering. He's been efficient when he's taken shots. Looney's been very reluctant to. He's actually shooting just under 78% from the field, and he is also one of the lowest usage guys in terms of shots. That's not surprising. He's still getting his legs back under him. And even though he gets a lot of offensive rebounds, oftentimes he's smaller than the guys that are then in position to do it. So some of the time it'll be best for him to not go right back up with the shot unless he can draw a foul. And it should also be noted that he's only shooting 54.5% from the line this year. That should get better. It is, again, a very small sample size, but it is, you know, it's something to consider that maybe the best thing for him a lot of the time, like Tristan Thompson and Andre Drummond, two guys who are great offensive rebounders, but oftentimes shaky at putbacks. Sometimes the best thing you can do is give the ball to the other guys and just take another bite at the apple, especially when the Warriors' offense is so good otherwise. And so there are a couple different alignments that the Warriors can use with Looney, but they should use his offensive rebounding as an advantage. I'd love to see him play a little bit more with Draymond. He could be in that circumstance when they pull Kevin Durant and just kind of use some lineups that only have Green and Curry on the floor, or even just, you know, maybe that end of the first quarter time they've used David West in that role. David West can do fine, just to see how Looney works there defensively and to see if there's a chemistry there. And also, it would be great if the garbage time lineup, I understand why it includes three big men because they just have them on the roster and the Warriors don't have that many other guys. But if they could, I don't know, try to make it work to get something more representative for Looney, because it would also help everyone out. Maybe, you know, maybe you can give Livingston a few extra minutes or something else just to get more representative. And that is just a challenge with this team. When you carry as many centers as the Warriors do, you're going to have to deal with some of those oddball things. And they are minutes that don't matter, but in terms of winning the game, but assessing the situation and assessing what you have moving forward is incredibly important. So we'll see what they do on that note, but it's not significant. It's not the most important thing in the world, but it's something that I want to watch. And one of the most important developments so far of this season is that both James Michael McAdoo and Anderson Varejão have been marginalized so far. Varejão has only played in 3 games, played a total of 13 minutes. James Michael McAdoo has only played 24 minutes in 4 games, and they've kind of bounced around who was the extra inactive guy because Damian Jones has, of course, been hurt. And then when McCaw was out, they both got to be on the active list, though they did not play a ton in those games. From what I have seen, I admit that I have not, you know, that we don't get that kind of practice access. I haven't been there much anyway, but I have not seen much at this point from either of them to say that I need to advocate or anybody else should for them to get more minutes, to get more time. The other players above them in the rotation have more distinct strengths and can use that to help the team win. One important thing to consider with these guys beyond the equity they have with Coach Kerr and with the team is something that is strange in McAdoo's circumstance. It's a CBA nuance, but it's still good to know, which is that when a player signs a straight 1-year contract and they will have bird rights at the end of it, so meaning early bird or full bird, that player gets a full no trade clause or gets to veto any trade, because what happens in that circumstance is that if the player gets traded, so let's say the Warriors traded him to, I don't know, let's say the Suns, where Tyson Chandler was going to miss more time and they really wanted to have another center, they would have the ability to trade him. However, McAdoo could also just say no, because if they make that deal, they lose the ability to pay him using bird rights. And it's a strange trade-off, though I think they did it so that people couldn't game the system and get this big signing advantage for a player that wasn't on their team to begin with, especially because it's only for players that were on a 1-year contract. So it does make some sense. But what that does functionally is it means that even if the Warriors wanted to move McAdoo, he would have a lot of say in the process. And while he will be a restricted free agent after the season, assuming the Warriors extend a qualifying offer, there is a reason that he could pressure them into saying, hey, if you're going to trade me, you have to pay me and then cut me. And that would be something the Warriors would have to deal with. I honestly feel like that's not the biggest deal in the world because it doesn't affect the Warriors' flexibility. It's a little bit more money out of Lacob and Goober's pockets should they decide to go that route. But it doesn't make that big a difference because it doesn't give them any extra spending flexibility. It's just saving money because all they have are minimum salaries in the first place. So it does, you know, it does take a little bit off the bottom line, but it doesn't affect their flexibility at all. This isn't a team that, you know, if they waived McAdoo or if they traded him, like, they gain all this flexibility. That said, you know, it would be kind of nice if they could get just a little bit by the idea of creating a trade exception, if they could do that. I don't expect it, but something else, if they decided to go on the route of that they didn't think McAdoo was worth having around, which I don't feel they're going to be, is that they could also just do, I don't really have a specific term for it, but I guess it would be a blind waiver. And the idea being that McAdoo is talented enough and intrigues enough GMs that someone might claim him. And so that is a possibility too, where, you know, the Warriors would hope that somebody would pick him up, but they wouldn't have a guarantee. They'd be prepared to pay him if nobody claimed him. But at the same point, you can do that. In a way, I believe that's what happened with Miami with Benno, where they expected to pay him, but then he was a good enough player, somebody claimed him. So that could happen, especially if the Warriors made that decision at a time that other teams were hungry for centers. And that ties in with Anderson Varejao. Varejao at this point seems, you know, closer to done. I mean, I felt that way in the playoffs and Kerr still played him a lot. But the difference there is that Varejao is at the end of his career. And depending on what they're talking about and what they want, if the Warriors needed a roster spot, let's say for a buyout or if they got somebody by a trade or whatever, my instinct is that Varejao would be the most likely guy to go. And they could do that in a couple different ways. They could try to trade him, unlikely, but they could also just nudge him into retirement. It's a more dignified way of doing this. But if you still want to play, they could cut him. It wouldn't be much of a cost. He's making the veterans minimum. And for players who have been in the league as long as he has, the league actually pays almost half of his salary. So it's not that big a deal to cut him in that way. He is a Kerr favorite. He has been, you know, even though he wasn't on the team that long, it certainly feels like he ingratiated himself to at least a fair portion of the Warriors on the roster. That said, if you have a better option, you certainly have to do that. The last guy I want to talk about is the Warriors' first-round pick in the 2016 draft, Damian Jones. Jones has been dealing with a torn pectoral muscle in his right arm and has been basically recovering from that since the Warriors drafted him. Because it happened actually about 2 weeks before the draft, and I guess you'd call it a parallel to Kevon Looney, that did push him down a little bit. Jones is a talented big man, and so the Warriors took him with the idea that it was going to take a little while for him to recover. And there is news on that front because there was reporting out there, I think Sam Amick had it first, that the Warriors are going to assign him to the Santa Cruz Warriors, to the D-League team, on November 20th, and with the intention of playing him in their November 25th game, which is against the Sioux Falls Skyforce. Wow, it's kind of a tongue twister. And then the more important part of that, which was in Connor Letourneau's story, is that they intend to have him on the NBA club once he's ready, which they hope will be soon after that point. And I've seen Jones work out a little bit. He's doing, you know, saw him doing a little bit with shooting, still working on getting his, you know, stamina up and everything like that. But having him around for a higher portion of the season, even if he can't be a major, let's call it a significant contributor this year to the main squad, will get him a lot of experience. And it's something that has been noticed about Kevon Looney, is that Looney got to be around the team a little bit last year, but Jones can have more hands-on experience than Looney did. And it would be great for the Warriors if he could be part of the solution this season. But even if he's not, you still get a lot of value out of that, letting him travel with the team. Maybe you can give him some reps in the D-League as well and strike that balance. And he has the physical capability to be someone that's worth trying because he's athletic, he works hard on the glass, he can block some shots. And so the best case scenario is that, you know, he becomes one of the players in that mix. You know, like, let's say he can jump Varejao, jump McAdoo in the rotation. Doesn't mean he's going to get locked into a spot, but, you know, if you can give him 5-10 minutes a game early on, get him a little bit used to the NBA, then maybe have something with that. And so having him available, let's call it, you know, early December to be, you know, on that kind of range is a big help for this team. And I bet there are some teams that would consider that were drafting in the late first that if they had known that he would be available that quickly, maybe would have thought about it a little bit differently. I mean, the bottom end of this draft was kind of weird. Scott Labissiere fell really far too. So did Deontay Davis, who actually got the highest guarantee ever for an American-born second-round pick and is doing well for Memphis. So you had kind of a group of talented American bigs around, or at least American college bigs, because Scal was born in Haiti. And so if the Warriors can get something from Jones, that's great. If they don't get anything from him, they have enough other bites at the apple. And the other reason why having him would be a big help is that it does give a little bit more cover in case the Warriors did want to get somebody at a different position who was a buyout candidate or a trade candidate later on, because then he can fill one of those kind of depth center roles and you wouldn't have as much of a need for a Varejao or a McAdoo. So he could give them a little bit of cover there. And beyond the long-term implications of getting him ready, that could be another benefit to having him at full strength. So that really is the big man group right now. If I, you know, we'll have to see how the rotation changes with time. I would like to see some different combinations. As I said, see some of JaVale McGee with David West, see some Kevon Looney with Draymond Green, which we've seen a little bit, but see a little bit more of that. And then really use this as a laboratory. Kerr deserves a lot of credit for trying that with JaVale McGee in the Denver game. That looks like it will continue moving forward and just trying out different things, seeing what works, because the Warriors are doing well enough at this point in the regular season that the expectation is that they will, you know, be around where we would expect in terms of record. They'll be in that mix. We'll have to see if the Clippers keep annihilating people like they did again tonight against the Nets, then, you know, maybe they become a bigger worry. But that isn't the most important part of this Warriors. It's about being ready for the playoffs, and this team defines their success that way almost entirely. So really assessing who works, who does not work, and what combinations before the trade deadline, obviously, but ideally a little bit before that, so you can know what you need to work with moving forward, know what the urgency is, because the Warriors don't have their first round pick this year, so it's not like they can do that. Also, they don't have a lot of salary flexibility because the players they have on roster are not exactly guys they want to trade, and the guys they want to trade are not exactly guys that other teams want to have. So that makes certain things less likely. I talked about that as part of the reason why I don't see the Warriors getting Tyson Chandler in a trade, because they just don't really have the matching salaries. A lot of other considerations for that too. But as we move closer, I certainly will do some work in terms of the buyout candidates and everything like that. But we need to know what teams are bad enough. But the general rules for those of you who are very invested in the possibility of the Warriors getting a buyout candidate, there are two basic things that you want to look for. One is a player who is not providing any future value to their team. So that doesn't necessarily mean somebody who's providing no present value, but they need to be providing no future value. So basically that means the player is going to be a free agent at the end of the season and they're not going to come back. So Joe Johnson on the Nets last year was a really good example of this. He was providing present value. He was making the Nets better, but he wasn't really going to provide future value. And so they did right by him. I believe he also left a lot of money on the table, which he then made back this year with signing a lucrative deal with the Utah Jazz. So that is one part that you're looking for. And then the other part, which sounds obvious because it is somebody who is good enough to justify making the move in the first place. So there are going to be players who, you know, get buyouts that the Warriors will be sitting there going, well, do they really move the needle for us? The Warriors have the benefit of having that shakiness in terms of Varejao at the bottom of their lineup, where certain teams like the Jazz are really 15 guys deep. And so for them, it's a much harder calculus to decide if they're going to get somebody. For the Warriors, if they can help, that's certainly a good thing. But it is still important to know that you're going for that. And you're not really taking lottery tickets. You're not taking rolls of the dice for the Warriors, at least in terms of long-term value. For the present, you know, maybe you do something like that. But those are really the things you want to look for. And then the third thing, if you want to call it that, is also a team where that present value is less important. So I talked about Joe Johnson. The reason why the Nets weren't willing to do that is because they, you know, their season was kind of hopeless. Even though they didn't have their own pick, that's spite is not really a good enough motivator to push beyond that. They wanted to give Johnson an opportunity. So you really do want to look for players on disappointing teams, on bad teams that look like they're not going to re-sign with those franchises. And before anybody asks, if Dallas gets there, the Warriors cannot sign Andrew Bogut as a free agent. It goes back to a rule, which I'm sure Warriors fans will love, with Zdrunas Ilgauskas, longtime former Cav, where basically you can't trade a guy, then have him get cut, and then sign him back. And they did that as a way of kind of preventing teams from gaming the system. And even though that is not what the Warriors presumably intended when they traded Andrew Bogut, that bar against reacquisition will be in effect. So they cannot sign Andrew Bogut during this year, even if they wanted to, even if he wanted to. That's just the way all this works. So there will be other options, but Andrew Bogut is not one of them. So if there are any other topics you want me to hit, the current plan is to have tomorrow's episode, which I guess will be Wednesday's, is a preview of the road trip as a whole. One of the benefits of watching the whole league and talking about it on various podcasts is that I have a little bit of sense that I'm also going to do research, just because that's also going to tie in with my writing and everything else. And so we'll impart that as kind of a preview. Not going to focus as much on predicting specific games. I don't really like doing that. But letting Warriors fans know what's going on with these franchises. Boston's dealing with a batch of injuries and everything like that. So are the Raptors to a point. They've been dealing with some stuff. So going to go through all that. If you have any feedback on the show, good, bad, indifferent, you can reach out to me at Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLeroux, DannyLeroux@gmail.com. You can also follow the show, Locked On Warriors, on Facebook, Locked On Dubs on Twitter, and then you can reach out, LockedOnWarriors@gmail.com as well. And if for those of you who are coming to this a little bit late, welcome. And there are also some topics that I've hit in prior episodes that are still relevant. I get asked every once in a while about the logistics of Kevin Durant next year in the cap. That's something I've hit a couple of different times and we'll spend some real time on once we get our hands on the new collective bargaining agreement, which has not been agreed to yet, much less gotten in my hands. So that's something that will come later and I probably won't address it too much between now and then, but we'll see. And that's something I've gotten asked about a few times, but we'll see where this team goes. We'll see how they look after this road trip. Their next home game, I believe, is the Wednesday before Thanksgiving against the Lakers. So we could learn a lot between now and then. And so also, if you want to check out my work at The Athletic, doing two Warriors pieces for every game and then trying to kind of get in some more stuff there, and also going to work on getting more high-end contributors. Those of you who subscribe during the playoff run know that we helped recruit a lot of really talented people to put their thoughts on the page, and the Warriors are a team that a lot of people have thoughts on, so that will continue to be a part of it. Also doing League Pass Games of the Week for Real GM, Dunked On Basketball Podcast, just released a Real GM Radio with Ben Golliver, and the last 10 minutes or so of that is all talking about the Warriors, so you can check that out. And if you want to support the show, you can leave a rating, leave a review in whatever podcast player you have, subscribe, download every episode, and you can check out our sponsor, SeatGeek. They're not advertising in this episode, but I don't care about that. I can tell you about them anyway. It's a great app. If you use the promo code LOWARRIORS, you can get $20 off your first order, and it tells them that you came from us, and you get to try them out. So thank you so much for listening. Take care, and make it a great day.